Blog Talk Radio.
Chatting with Sherry is presented by the Writers and Illustrators of the Future. They've been providing a means for new and budding writers to have a chance for their creative efforts to be seen and acknowledged. Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today I'm welcoming back an old friend, John Elsbeck. He's going to be talking about his show Suspense and probably other stuff. Hi, John.
Hi, Sherry. How are you today?
I'm okay. I have a cold, so my throat might go out a little bit, but I have a lot of cough drops and tea, so I should be okay.
Okay. Well, sounds like we're prepared then. Well, you're prepared. I'm not, but but I'm as prepared as I'm going to be, so.
I have a terrible constitution. I walked in the rain for all of the time it took from the carport to our apartment, and mm-hmm. I caught a cold.
Aw, well, are you guys getting rain again tonight and tomorrow?
Yeah.
Yeah, because we're getting it tomorrow, or tonight and tomorrow, so stay inside if you can.
LA gets it first.
Yeah.
I always know when it's coming because I see all the posts from my friends in LA showing the rain. I go, oh, shit, this way.
Yep. Well, we actually got snow, and I live on the slopes of Mount Lucan, so we actually had snow at the top a couple days ago. That was fun.
I really love that. When I, you know, I lived in LA and was raised in LA, and I'm an LA girl. I moved to San Diego just 6 years ago, so I'm a new immigrant to San Diego from LA.
Oh, San Francisco, yeah. But yeah, it's cool. It's it didn't last for very long, but yeah. It's fun
never
to see
does.
Every now and then, as long as I have to shovel it.
One of the coolest things is when it's really cold, and yes, it does get cold in L.A., it gets into the 30s, and it rains, and all of the hills are snow-capped. That is really pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And like, though it doesn't last long, because it gets hot the next day.
Yeah. I mean, Mount Wilson and
Lush.
The mountains immediately north of Pasadena were all snow covered. I think they still are at this point, or I haven't looked recently. So, but I wouldn't be surprised.
It was really raining hard last week, and I made a note on my Facebook page that it was pouring, and someone sent me a note saying it rains in California in the winter. That's all it does.
Yeah. Yeah, I was looking at my journal for the year, and it started January 1st, of course, and I'm just looking at the rain. So yeah, we're getting to that time of year, and then it'll go for 6 months without raining at all. So.
And then also we have weird times, like if the Santa Anas come in, then it doesn't rain, but then we have the heavy winds and the fire alerts. And that can happen anytime, and in the winter, because I remember 1 year it happened in January.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Well, I've been pretty lucky as far as the wildfires go, but three years ago now, I forget which one it was, but I could look out my bedroom window and see it right on the mountain across the valley from me. I thought, okay, that's a little too close.
Well, there was 1 year, well, actually a couple of years, but there was 1 year when I was in college that they called it the Rim Fire because it went all the way around, a ring around the valley of fire, all the way around the mountains, and all of the, it went right down to Malibu, went a ring around the whole valley, went through it's been a while, I think it's Agora, it went through Agora and went right into Malibu, and it was a horrible fire. It doesn't happen that often, but we do get some.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, that was scary. That was when I was in college, so I was 18. It was just my parents were grocery shopping. My brother was off with his friends, so it was just me and my dog. And it was, like, really bad. I mean, like, grain of ash. So it's really funny.
Oh,
and my
wow.
name was Duchess, and Duchess was on a leash. And I watered the roof, and she thought it was really funny because rain, and she kept, I said, no, don't lick that because it has ash in it. And I'm like, and then I'm running into the house with her leash to get, like, things like pictures and stuff like that. Because I'm all by myself. Oh. I don't know what's going to happen, so I'm just stuffing the car with stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what else could you do? It's, you know, grab the things that you can't replace.
Yeah, luckily my parents came home, and luckily it didn't come down that far, but it is really scary when you're close to a fire.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Sorry about that. I don't know, my mind.
No, that's okay.
We were talking before the show, and a legend passed away, DC Fontana.
Yeah.
I just saw it on Twitter, and she was an amazing woman. She was like a pioneer in, especially for science fiction. Did you want to say anything? Because we're both Star Trek fans.
Oh, it's just, you know, when you're a kid and you first discover a show like Star Trek and you see these random names in the credits, and DC Fontana, of course, was very closely connected with Star Trek, and, you know, I'd see her in every episode or see her name in every episode, and I didn't know anything beyond that because this is pre-internet, so. So if it wasn't in a library book, you weren't going to get it. So, but, you know, as the years went on, I found out just how important she was. I mean, she was TV's first producer, female producer, I mean. And, you know, how much of...
American television, first, as far as I know, first American female producer, especially in the all-boy field of science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
That's why she went by DC. She didn't go by Dorsey.
Ah, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That's like, you know, what's the writer's name? C.L. Moore? Catherine Moore, but she went by her initials. And she was, you know, a great science fiction writer. She was married to Henry Kuttner. He was a great horror writer, but that was part of the times.
Yeah, I mean, women had to do that in order to get published or get a job as a producer or a writer. Well, she started as a writer. She wrote episodes for several shows Gene Roddenberry produced, like Lieutenant and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And she was incredible. You know, it's weird. If you think about it, early film in the 1920s were full of women, writers, directors, producers. There were every kind of person, minorities of every kind. And then all of a sudden sound came and it all became an all-boys network. Isn't that weird?
Mm-hmm. It's odd how that worked out, but thankfully we're moving the towards a more balanced representation.
Yeah, it's slow, but it's slowly doing it. It's like the old saying, two steps forward, three steps back. It's just weird. Yeah, we're very slowly moving back toward the way it was in the 1800s to the 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know very much about the old radio show. Do you know who wrote it? Was there anyone involved?
I'm sorry?
Were there any
you
women
broke up
writers?
For a second.
Were there any women?
Louise Fletcher is the one that immediately jumps to mind because she wrote some of the most popular episodes, like The Hitchhiker, which you know Orson Welles starred in, and then it got remade as a as an episode of Twilight Zone with Inger Stevens,
which is one of my favorites. I love Twilight Zone.
Yeah, I know she wrote quite a few suspense episodes. I'm just drawing a blank on which ones right now. But yeah, there was another prolific female writer that I am also drawing a blank on.
it's there and it just won't come to you.
As I'm getting older, I'm bad with names. Well, I've always been bad with names, but I'm getting worse with names. Louise Fletcher for sure jumped out immediately. The original suspense was pretty much a show of its time. It was largely, male. I mean, the most prolific actor on the show, though, I think was Agnes Moorehead. I think she did.
I love her.
At least 15, 20 episodes. I mean, she kept doing them even into the late 50s when, she was already well established as a star at that point, but she still enjoyed doing them.
They had a Twilight Zone marathon. I don't remember how long ago, maybe a few months ago, and they showed that one where she's being attacked by the little robots.
Yeah, the invaders.
That's such a good episode. She's so brilliant in that. I mean, that takes craft and ability and brilliance to pull that show.
She did an entire episode with essentially no dialogue. I mean, except, yelling and for someone who so often, did the glamorous image. I mean, she went full on, farm woman, and she was great. Orson Welles referred to her as America's greatest actress, I wouldn't argue it.
No.
she was a force.
She was. She was part of Orson Welles' company, wasn't she? Back in the 30s. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she was in a number of his films, including Citizen Kane and I believe The Magnificent Ambersons.
I just remember her. Was it Guess Who's Coming to Dinner where she played the creepy, bigoted woman?
Yay. Don't remember offhand.
Oh, she was really good. You wanted to slap her face.
But embarrassing as it is to admit, I leave Turner Classic Movies on all the time when I'm working, but I always have the sound off, so it's more, just background. And Guess Who's Coming to Dinner is on fairly regularly, but I haven't sat and actually watched it.
Oh, it's such a wonderful movie. Well, it's a wonderful movie from start to finish, but Spencer Tracy's speech at the end of the movie where he's talking to everybody about, how he feels and how the day went and everything. It sounds like a real casual thing, but it is his last performance. He was dying when he did it, and it's also a tour de force. You cannot take, even with Katharine Hepburn there with tears pouring down, and that was real, her tears really were pouring down, and that was an act. You cannot tear your eyes away from him. If just put on the last 10 minutes of it just to hear his speech, it's just, that's acting.
Okay, I will do that.
I mean, watch the whole whole movie if you can, but that last, his speech at the end about the love he feels for his wife, played by Katharine Hepburn, and telling his daughter and Sidney Poitier about if you guys really are strong enough and you love each other that much, you should be together. It's a really beautiful speech. Anyway, I highly, highly, highly recommend it. If you want to see a great actor giving a tour de force, that's 10 minutes you should see.
Okay, well, I'm sure I'd love it then.
I love
almost anything Spencer Tracy or Katharine Hepburn or Sidney Poitier is in anyway, so I should certainly enjoy it.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's actually, there's some really funny parts. I mean, the part where he can't get his he's really upset and he goes out to a drive-in. They used to have a place where you could drive your car and you put it in and somebody come out and they served you at your car. They don't do that anymore, except for one place in Los Angeles, and that's only on certain nights of the week.
There's a place like that back in my hometown of Harrisburg called the Red Rabbit, and every time I go back for a visit, that's one of the things I want to do is go to the Red Rabbit and get the car hop service.
I actually really do remember, my parents used to take us to a place called A&W, which made the root beer.
Yeah.
It still does, yeah. Makes the root beer. They used to own a bunch of drive-ins, and they used to have a tiny little cheeseburger, like as big as your little kid's hand, and a little tiny root beer in a little tiny mug, and we used to order. Now looking back, it's adorable, but then it was just fun. We would split the fries. It was a small fry. We would split the fries. It was so much fun because you're in the car and you're doing it. It's just like going to a drive-in movie. People today don't know what that was like when you were a little kid. It was fun.
Oh yeah, I loved going to the drive-in as a kid. I was gonna say I saw 2001 at the drive-in, but no, that was at the Transluxe Theater, which is like there's a name for the process, but it's a like double-sized screen, which was amazing.
Panorama?
Cinerama maybe? Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm drawing a blank on that.
We would go see all the Disney movies at the drive-in, and my parents would put us on top of a blanket. We would be in our pajamas, and then we'd have another blanket on top, and we'd have as much garbage food as we want.
All right.
Sitting in the car watching Snow White or Cinderella or Dumbo or whatever.
Aww.
And then
we
go
back
to the car.
Aww. Yeah, drive-ins are hard to find these days. There's still a few of them around.
I don't think they exist anymore, do they? I mean, the ones in...
I think there's one in, like, all of Southern California. It's... Yeah.
The ones in Los Angeles are gone, as far as I know.
Yeah. Back in my hometown, there's still... I think there's still... one or two within like 20 miles of there, but they're pretty much all but gone at this point.
Which is sad
because there was and times have changed and they don't always change for the better. But
I know I don't know. I know that it was maybe because I was a little kid in the in the early 60s, so it's still left over from the 50s where it was a big car thing and going living in the valley and the big car thing, and everybody wanted to drive their cars everywhere, so that's why they had drive-in food and drive-in theaters and everything. But it's a good memory because all I remember is those types of things, that little kid stuff, you know? I mean, I remember, because when you're a teenager, that's when the drive-in started to be faded out, so I didn't get any of the fun part as a teenager in that, because by the time I was old enough to date, most of the drive-ins were gone. Maybe three were left.
Okay. Yeah, a lot of the drive-ins in Harrisburg were still around when I was a teenager in early 20s. I mean, it was in my early 20s that they started really disappearing. But,
No snogging in the back of the car. None of that. Well, I had seen it in movies, so I wanted to do it, but never got to. I'm very sad, huh? But it's part of my that I didn't get to misspend.
Well, you know.
Now this is a really weird question. I don't think I've ever asked you before.
Uh-huh.
I know you started doing these because of your love for the series Suspense. But what do you think about the fact that most of the radio stuff came from vaudeville and the old type of theater that they used to have? Like, I don't know if Suspense did, but a lot of the comedy shows did, and some of the dramas that were like on Playhouse 90 and stuff like that, that all came from theater. Do you feel that when you listen to the tapes? Did that happen with Suspense? Was that from theater?
I don't think it was. I mean, a lot of radio shows, yeah, especially like the comedy shows like Charlie McCarthy and Edgar Bergen, Jack Benny. Yeah. I mean,
George
a lot
Burns
of these guys.
And Allen.
Yeah, I mean they were vaudeville acts that moved over to radio and then eventually moved over to television or film. But as far as Suspense goes, because in the late 20s is when radio really started, and then early 30s is when I think the very first anthology show like that was called The Witch's Tale. Or if it wasn't the very first one, it was one of the very first ones. And, you know, it was the first one that had, like, a regular host. And the old Nancy, the Witch of Salem, and then she would introduce the stories and you know. But then that format got to be pretty popular, and Suspense is actually one of the later ones that came along. Programs like The Lights Out and Inner Sanctum and The Shadow and The Whistler were all right around that same time, or a little earlier maybe. But Suspense was really sort of a radio construct more than something that came over from the stage, or you know either vaudeville or from theater. Some of the stories you definitely get the feeling that it was adapted from a stage play because of the way the settings are worked, or I don't know. It's hard to describe it, but sometimes you can listen to one and think, you know, this sounds like a stage play. But I think the bulk of them were written either adapted from popular stories of the time or written especially for the show. And you know, they were still figuring out the subtleties of how to do radio at that time. Like if you listen to, it's always funny to me, if you listen to a radio drama from like the early 30s where they haven't quite worked out how to do all the sound effects, and they have a tendency to overtell, like, I'm going to shoot you now with this 45 automatic that I'm holding in my right hand. And, you know, as they got more skilled in terms of what they could, you know, what they could get across just in audio terms, they started doing less and less of that, because, you know, there's so many things that there are certain sounds that if you hear it, you don't need an explanation of what it is. You say, oh, I know what that is. That's whatever. I can't think of a good example at the moment. But, yeah, and so, but by the time Suspense came along, they'd pretty much worked that sort of thing out, and I think the stories on the original Suspense really flowed well. The format changed a little bit from time to time. Originally, their host was the Man in Black, who was Joseph Will. He played Mr. Wilson on Dennis the Menace. Joseph.
Oh, yeah, good actor.
Yeah, I can't think of his name, but yeah, he was the Man in Black. For a time, movie star Robert Montgomery was the host, because he was also the executive producer. The format changed every now and then, but pretty much it was the same thing.
Was
I don't know.
Was Elizabeth Montgomery in any of those? Robert Montgomery was Elizabeth Montgomery's dad, and he started her. So was she in any of those?
I think she did a couple of radio dramas, but not on Suspense. I think she might have done a couple in the late 50s, but I don't recall that she ever did a Suspense episode. Which is, yeah, it's too bad. You know, she was a terrific actress.
She sort of
got typecast a little bit, but when she had a chance to really show what she could do, she was so good.
Look at Lizzie Borden. That was just...
Yeah, exactly.
She did that, I think, because she was trying to break the Samantha thing.
Yep.
No, I was going to say there was there was a TV movie that I always loved her in. It was called The Sundance Woman or something. She played Ella Place, running from the law, because she was the only survivor. And she was really good in that. I don't know. It's not like it was a TV movie, so it's not like it's a big movie.
Okay.
Have you ever seen it?
No, it doesn't sound familiar. But I was thinking of... Earlier in her career, you know, pre-Bewitched, she did a Twilight Zone episode called Two.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, she and
Two.
Hmm? Yeah, she and
Two.
Charles Bronson.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought that I love that one, and part of the reason I love it is that he's sort of, they're both so against type. You know, Charles Bronson, like the ultimate tough guy, who's like, he's a pacifist. He doesn't want to fight. he's done. And she's the one who's constantly trying to start something with him.
Yeah. And she's filthy through almost 90%. She's almost unrecognizably filthy through most of the... I mean, because they both just survived a major war, so there's a reason for it. But she's almost unrecognizable.
And there's a funny story that I only remember a little bit of, but she was so determined to, you know, not be at all glamorous for that role that she actually went too haggard looking. They sort of had to back her down a little bit. It's like, no, that's okay. This you're going a little too rough there. So what they ended up with on the screen was, and not nearly as haggard as she was going for.
think Where's how that? Beautiful women loved ugly up for TV and movies.
Yep.
What's the name of that movie that Charlize Theron gained weight and she's basically unrecognizable in the movie and she plays a murderer?
Doesn't sound familiar.
She won an Oscar.
Oh, yeah. I've never seen it, but I've heard of it.
Yeah, I mean, one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen. And she's unrecognizable as herself. Yeah, even her voice doesn't sound like her. It's just
she was really, really determined to give everything in that role. It sounds like. I mean, I think she put on like 40 pounds or something specifically for the role. She wanted to be almost unrecognizable. Isn't that
job.
I think that's the right one.
She did an excellent job. She was I didn't even know it was her. I saw it at a preview house, so I didn't even know who was in it. I just got one of those flyers that you barely look at. And I didn't know it was her until the beginning credits. that she was, oh, look, it's her. And then I'm going, where is she?
Mm-hmm.
Because when you go to a preview, they don't give you any information.
Yeah.
I saw another movie like that. I saw, but it wasn't that they didn't look like themselves. It was just so out of character. I can't remember the name of it, but it's with Glenn Close and Jeff Bridges, and he plays a psychotic killer in it.
Okay.
And it's like so against type. And in fact, when it came in the movie, it was really bloody. So when it came on TV later, I saw it again. And I go, oh, they cut all that stuff out. Because I think everybody on Cars wrote a little bloody there.
Okay. Yeah. I'm curious what that one is. It doesn't sound familiar to me, but.
I can't remember the name of it. Glenn Close was his lawyer, and he completely fooled her. Edward Norton was in it too. Very young.
Well, sounds like it should be a good film.
It was.
I mean, it's got a good cast.
I can't remember the name of it. That's the problem with going to a preview. It's not as, the details of it don't stick in your head because you're not going through the publicity of it. You're going because you got a flyer to go see a free movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I used to go to those a lot when I was in college because I couldn't afford to go to a movie, so I went to previews. So I know you've been working hard and we're at the halfway point. So I wanted you to talk because he's still editing everybody for his series.
I'll be dead editing 5 years after I'm dead.
Don't do that.
No, I mean, my ghost is going to come back and have to edit because I'm that far behind. But that's okay.
He's a very busy and hard working editor here, so, and he helps me.
Yep.
Oh, I wanted to let you guys know. I just released the re-edited, beautifully fixed version of Mary Brooks' Mabel of the Anzac Part 2, and John was very important on the editing of that, so I want to publicly thank you for that.
Oh, thank you.
You're very kind.
Are you happy with how it turned? Oh.
Oh yeah.
Are you happy with how the final version turned out?
Yeah. What's really important to me was that Mary was happy. She loved it.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's the important thing. If the,
you know, it's
the author likes it. Yep.
You know, as an author, you know that's very important that the author likes it.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's one of the joys of editing my own show, because if I'm not happy with how something turned out, I know who to blame.
Dirty
so-and-so.
What can we expect this season? What kind of episodes? I mean, not giving everything away, but just a little teasers, little tastes.
Oh, we're well into recording for season 6. The very first episode of the season, this is so random. It's called 5 Golden Guineas, and a story of that name had been done on a show called Presenting Boris Karloff in, I think, 1949. It was one of those interesting programs because it was on ABC as a television show, but it was also done as a radio show. But it was generally the same cast, but it was two different productions. It wasn't like they just recorded. Yeah, it wasn't like they just recorded the television version of it and put it on the radio. They did two separate versions of it. And the show only lasted for like one season. And no, it was 13 episodes. No copies of the program exist anywhere, so far as I know. I mean, there are no scripts left. There are no, you know, fragments of it. But I had the idea of recreating one episode, which is the only one I could find any information about. And so we wrote a script based on a description by Stephen King in his book Dance Macabre of what this episode was about. So it was fun recreating it, and we had a brand new actor in for that one. Brand new to us, I mean. He's been acting for many years. A gentleman named Terrence Stone, who was just fabulous. And he was in with Joe Ackman and Michelle Cardinaux and Darren Jacobs. So it was real fun English-themed story. And, you know, that was the very first episode we recorded for season 6. And right now we're working our way through the first half of the season. Some of the episodes we've recorded so far are, I'm writing the scripts for two of them right now. Ex-Astris with Amy Pemberton and Sam McKay. And, Feynman's voice, which will be Marilyn Gigliotti and Athazana Duran. It's about a group of occultists who summon a demon who's all too helpful. But yeah, it's been a really fun season so far because our circle of actors just keeps growing and growing. Most recently, we had Rekha Sharma in. If you're a fan of Battlestar Galactica or Star Trek Discovery, she's a regular character on both of them. So, but she's just fabulous. And the thing that really caught me off guard was how good she is at doing A, comedy, and B, accents. She can do anything. But let's see. On the 14th, we're recording we do 26 episodes in a season, and we're recording the midway point episode on the 14th, and that one's starring none other than our fabulous Adrian Wilkinson.
Yay!
Yeah. And speaking of whom? Huh?
Did you know that Adrian won my one of the Chatty Awards? She won for Live Listen.
No. Way to go, Adrienne.
Yeah.
I'm sure she's a great interview. I've never interviewed her, but she's amazing.
Super fun interview. And
yep.
That had an incredible amount of live listens and just got it hands down.
Aw, way to go, Adrienne.
Yeah.
We were, speaking of whom, Adrienne and I went to the Voice Arts Awards a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I saw the post. You guys look like you had a blast.
Yeah. I am so not the red carpet sort of person. I will assiduously avoid events like that if I possibly can. But she made it so much fun. So we didn't win, but we were finalists in two different categories. And, next year we'll bring home the gold.
All right.
Yep.
I think that's cool. It's not easy to get nominated, so just being nominated is an honor.
Yeah, and we made it to the last four in both categories. It was just wasn't the year, but next year will be, I hope. So, but,
are you doing the Peabody Awards again? Did you put yourself up for it?
I'm sorry?
Did you put yourself up for the Peabody Awards?
Not yet. We have to get our entry in a couple more weeks. The entry deadline is I think January 7th or something like that.
Cool. Well, mazel tov.
Thank you.
I'm going ethnic.
Okay.
Anyway, I hope you win.
Well, yeah, Peabody would be wonderful, but, we'll see how it goes.
Yep. So when does your season begin, or has it already begun?
If you go by IMDb, it already began. If you go by what's edited, not yet.
It's not always accurate. Midsummer Murders just came out with season 21. And I went to look up to see who one of the actors was, and it had like character players and under five liners, but it didn't have the main guest stars. And I was like, this is not cool.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I was literally shocked in a major series.
Yeah, that's surprising, but yeah, IMDb is a wonderful source, but it isn't always necessarily accurate. And that's not their fault. It's as accurate as the information that's submitted.
That's right. It's who's ever loading in the information from whatever. If it's an actor, his agent or manager, or if it's the show, it's the production people. And sometimes people can pay to be in the professional part of it, and they put in wrong information, like rumor and stuff like that.
Managers
have to come in and take out all the stuff that's not right.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, it's a really good source, but don't always believe everything you read on it.
Yeah, if there's something that doesn't sound quite right,
It probably isn't.
It does bear a little investigating.
Yes. Go for other sources. See if there's any articles about whatever you're looking up, before you, from a good source, like a newspaper or magazine.
Exactly. But, that's the news anywhere. I mean, it doesn't never hurts to verify.
Well, yeah, and today everybody believes rumors. When I went to college, one of the classes I took was journalism, and one of the things that I was taught is that you don't put anything in your article unless you have at least three sources. Well, nowadays it's like one rumor that they read on the web and everybody's posting it. It makes no sense to me.
Yep. Yep, that's true. But yeah, I always, when I think of journalism, I always think of, do you remember Kolchak the Night Stalker?
Yeah.
Darren McGavin.
Yeah,
that's a journalist.
I love Darren McGavin. I watched him in anything. I even watched him in all the Disney movies he did. He was just the most fab actor.
Mm-hmm.
And he was cute.
Well, you know, that wasn't really my thing, but... But
I could see
where a woman might find him attractive, or you know somebody other than me. I mean,
it's just like discussing something with my brother, and we would be we both have some dissimilar and some similar tastes, like any other two people. And I would be discussing a show, and we both liked it. We were discussing it. And I would say, oh, and he's really cute. And my brother would say, just like, oh, I wouldn't know about that, but he's a good actor.
Yep. Yeah, I see what you mean. So your brother and I had all along the same lines.
Because a woman can look at a woman and say whether or not they feel that they're attractive without worrying about themselves. Men cannot.
No, I mean there are certain guys that I can look at and say, "Damn, that's a good-looking guy," and not
really?
Think twice about it. Yeah, and it doesn't mean anything other than, "Damn, that's a good-looking guy." But I just didn't think of Darren McGavin that way. It's more. He's a great actor. But yeah, I mean, it's not like he's ugly. I mean, I just never really thought about it.
Well, I'm not saying he was a sex symbol. I just thought he was cute.
Yeah. Okay. Well. Yeah, he was cute. Well, watching him in Kolchak sort of tough to draw that, or tougher for me to draw because he wore the same thing all the time.
And he was older.
Always wore that ratty. Yeah. Oh, well, that's
and
true,
he was
too.
He in that. He was, like, in his, like, 60s or something. I'm talking when he was younger.
Yeah. Oh, you like in the 50s?
Yeah.
In the 1950s, I mean. Yeah, I never saw any of those films. I remember he was on a series with, I think, Burt Reynolds. It was, like, Riverboat or something.
What was it called?
And it was, like, in the 50s. I think it was like called Riverboat or something. He was on with Burt Reynolds when Burt Reynolds was like young, like in his 20s. And yeah, Darren McGavin looked all buff. He looked dang.
No, I didn't know that. I didn't know they had worked together. That's interesting. Cool.
Yeah. It's like mid 50s maybe. Mid 1950s. I can't tell you exactly, but yeah, someplace in there. It's before Burt Reynolds. Huh? I'm pretty sure it was pre Gunsmoke. Yeah. Speaking of Gunsmoke.
Don't even know what we're talking about, but that's okay.
quick side note. You know that Gunsmoke was actually a radio show before it was a TV show.
Yep.
And the star was William.
Interesting. Like, how many popular series were radio shows before they became TV shows? They did the transition.
Mm-hmm.
They tested it. They tested a lot of things on radio before they allowed them to be put on television. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the show, but I was listening to an interview. I like to watch a lot of interviews with actors and producers and directors, and I think it was with Larry Gelbert, who did MASH and a lot of other things.
Yeah.
And he was talking about a show he did in the 50s, and they had to write 4 or 5 radio shows before the network would put it onto the network. It was like, it was in the 50s, like during the transition after the studios had failed, and that's how television was, it was finally getting all these really theater talent, and which was one of the reasons the studios failed. And the way they auditioned people for stuff was doing their radio stuff. I also heard that about Twilight Zone was a lot of, they had a radio show, and they used to audition a lot of the actors. It's a separate show, it wasn't Twilight Zone, it was another anthology that they had on the radio, that they used to audition their actors that from Broadway before they put them onto the TV series.
Hmm.
It's really interesting.
Okay.
It was like a little step in the process.
Ah. Hmm. Never knew that.
Yeah, and a lot of the comedy shows, there was like a transition period. They tested it in, they were popular in the 50s, and they tested it to see if the, because, you know, all those old radio shows were in front of a live audience. So they tested it with their marketing or whatever their testing is to see when they started doing their TV shows whether the audiences would have liked it, seeing them in person as opposed to just hearing their voices. Like My Favorite Husband with Lucy, Jack Benny and The Jack Benny Show and stuff like that. They actually, that was part of their, the end of their notes that they took after the show, because they always got cards and you wrote on the cards. My parents told me about it. And would you like to see them on TV was one of the questions. My dad said this when we saw it. He said, you would think it was a throwaway question, but later on I found out, this is my dad, found out that it was one of the most important questions of these people's careers.
Wow. Okay. Makes
really
sense, though.
Yeah. It's sort of like a, sort of part of the audition process.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting.
Very
that,
cool.
That's how important radio was. Even for suspense.
Yep.
Because a lot of the actors from the later on from the 50s, a lot of the actors in the 50s went on to do Twilight Zone, and a lot of Rod plucked a lot of his people from the radio shows like Suspense and from Broadway. So that's why probably there was a correlation between Suspense and Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm. He did. He actually wrote for Suspense.
Yeah,
radio
probably, yeah. I didn't know he worked for. Well, he was a writer. He wrote for everybody, didn't he?
Yeah, but I mean, he submitted. He submitted early in his writing days. He submitted to the radio show. Never got accepted for the radio show, but he did end up writing an episode of the TV series Suspense, and I'm drawing a blank on the name of it, but he was a big fan of radio anthologies like that, which I think must have played some sort of had some sort of influence on his interest in doing the Twilight Zone.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
The Twilight
Zone is funny.
My favorite, though. Sorry.
I'm sorry?
I love Twilight Zone. That's one of my favorite series.
Oh, me too. Yeah, I mean,
there's
that...
Do you remember the episode with Keenan Wynn when he played a writer who created a wife, and then she was so perfect that he created a secretary, and the wife mm-hmm. was being terrible to him, and she took a file. He explained to her that he created her, and she was the
yep.
file had all the tape. He would talk
yes.
into one of those old tape things, and she threw it
yep.
into the fire, and she disappeared. My favorite
mm-hmm.
part of that whole episode is the end, with Rod
yeah.
at the end saying,
yep.
well, of course,
and
know that it's ridiculous, that this never could happen, and Keenan interrupts him, oh, Rod. And he throws it in the
yep.
fire. He disappears, and the last thing you see is Rod's shoulders shrugging.
Yeah, and that I think that was the first on-camera appearance by Rod Serling on The Twilight Zone.
Is it?
Because the first season he didn't do, he did the voiceover, but he didn't appear on camera. But from season two on, then he did. So that was really the first time he was on camera. Except for, I think he did during season one, he would do like, not sneak previews, but like talk at the end of the show, we would talk about what was coming up next week. But I'm not sure if those were on camera or not.
Huh. That's interesting.
But it's funny that he did it, had Keenan Wynn using a dictaphone, because the way Rod Serling apparently wrote was he would take his dictaphone out by the pool and sit there and have a drink and have a smoke and dictate an entire script in the course of an afternoon, and that's how he did it.
It makes a lot of sense. And as a writer, you know that characters come alive to you, and they'll tell you what they want to do and what they don't want to do. So the whole thing made a whole lot of sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I have a sort of related Keenan Wynn story.
Okay.
My my grandmother was an actress.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother was an actress in Pennsylvania, and you remember the show Route 66?
Sure.
George Maharis and Martin Milner, I think. They drove around in a Corvette, and they filmed an episode in, just outside of my hometown, and this is before I was even born, but my grandmother was in the episode, and Keenan Wynn was the guest star, and somehow Keenan Wynn ends up saying, you want to go for a ride on my motorcycle? Because he had a Harley Davidson. He was apparently he raced him and stuff. And she's saying, you know, I'm married. And he just laughs. And it's sort of funny now, because if she had known then Keenan Wynn's, or what we know now about Keenan Wynn's interests, she wouldn't have worried. But she said he was a total gentleman. He was fun. And that was the one and only time my grandmother's been on a motorcycle.
That's funny.
But, yeah, it was random. It's such a random thing.
But I didn't know he was a motorcycle guy.
Yeah, I didn't know that either until she told me that. And, you know, more recently I thought to actually look it up and go, oh, yeah, he would do I think, I'm not sure because now my memory's playing tricks on me. I think he did a lot of, like, maybe dirt track racing? Or am I thinking of Steve McQueen? It's one or the other, but I know Keenan Wynn was an avid motorcyclist and he did racing. But I might be thinking of Steve McQueen with the dirt track racing.
I mean, you learn something new every day. Never knew that. That's kind of cool.
Yep.
We're coming to the end. I want to thank you for taking time from your editing for coming on the show and chatting with me.
Oh, no problem. I'm always glad to come on. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, John.
Okay. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you. And thank you for Thank you.